Welcome to another episode of the Santa Barbara Public Library Coffee Break. As usual, I am joined by my co-host,
Cassidy Charles.
And today's guest,
Molly Weta.
And yes, so we have started summer reading. Summer reading is in full swing. The full slate of events is ongoing, and the children's area has been bustling, which is always cool to see.
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't picked up your Choose Adventure program booklet yet, they're available at the Santa Barbara Public Library, downtown at the Central Library. I believe there's some at the East Side Library as well. So this can be your guide to finding out about all of the children's programs that we have going on, as well as teens and adults this summer. And we've got a full slate of events for all ages here at the library. So grab that booklet.
And as I understand, the adult summer reading program has already passed last year's signups.
Yeah,
by quite a few.
At the Central Library, we had 92-93 people participate in 2017, and this year we're like well over 130 readers. So that's awesome. And we still have so many other programs and activities planned. So
kickoff is in what, the 27th? Is that the
kickoff already happened?
I mean, the municipal wine event.
Oh, the tech tasting.
Yes.
So Muni Wine, you're thinking into the depths of July. Mm-hmm. We have a tech tasting coming up towards the end of July at Municipal Winery, and we'll have books as well as music and different technology that we have, like our virtual reality systems will be there and available to use. So, but thinking now in our calendar
in
events,
June, actually. Sorry.
What's coming up in the next week or 2 weeks, we have plenty going on, so I want to throw it to Molly, our senior librarian of youth services and public programming, to discuss.
Yeah, so we've got some fun new events for kids coming up. We're kicking off a chess club on Sundays at 1 o'clock. And so, you know, new players can come and kind of learn the basics, but they can also pair up with more seasoned players to practice their skills. And that's going to be happening on 6/24, 7/8, and 8/12. So three chances this summer, and we're looking to just make that a monthly Sunday afternoon event, you know, going on into the school year. So that's exciting. And then our resident art historian in youth services, Hillary, who you may know from Wiggly Storytime fame, she's very popular with the toddler crowd. She's going to be doing for older kids some art adventures that are going to be learning about contemporary artists and also experimenting with some different mediums in their style. So the first one is Louise Bourgeois, who's a sculptor artist and is most famous for these large-scale spider-like constructions. And so they're going to be making those out of different materials, kind of inspired by the way that she does her own. And then we'll also have some other authors or artists throughout the summer, Michelle Basquiat and Yaoi Kusamama, who does the infinity mirror, but is also has all those dots.
Get your Instagrams
polka
out.
Polka dots, yeah. So, and then finally finishing out the summer with Joseph Cornell boxes, which are assemblage art and very fun to do for kids of all ages. So that should be fun.
And then in terms of the adult calendar, we have the Music Academy of the West, the traditional summer concerts.
Which are always well attended. So, arrive reasonable time to get your seat.
So the first one starts on June 16th on the Saturday, and they'll continue in June and July. And then on the 20th of June, we have for World Refugee Day, we are showing a documentary, and there'll be a discussion panel after, as well as there's going to be an opportunity to also use our virtual reality systems to tour specific areas, the refugee camps.
And I did have someone come to the library specifically to ask about the VR because they were pretty excited by it. So it's a good opportunity to kind of use technology to augment the experience and just kind of complement the things that are going on. So it's kind of a cool use.
Yeah, and we have a lot of local nonprofits on that panel to talk about the work that they do with refugee communities and sort of ways that people can get involved in helping and just learning about all of the experiences that people are going through.
Mm-hmm. And like we mentioned, there's a number of opportunities for adults to participate in the library this summer. And one of the best ways to participate is with our book clubs that we have we're up to six now, regularly offered and attended book clubs. Our kind of newest one is the Social Justice Book Club, and it meets on the third Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock. This month in June, they'll be meeting on the 19th. And the selection is A Queer and Pleasant Danger by Kate Bornstein. And I know Jen, our programming and marketing librarian, who you heard on our first episode, is the facilitator for that book club, as well as some other partnerships that she's cultivating to bring in other perspectives apropos to the book. So she's very excited about having that kicked off and launched and those discussions. And today, actually, for the kind of theme for our staff picks is related to that, and it's related to Pride Month in June. So, yeah, what Molly, as our guest,
yeah. What did you bring to the
table?
Well,
so June for the American Library Association is LGBTQ Book Month, and so we just take that as an opportunity to highlight fiction and nonfiction that talk about the queer experience. So when we were talking about the theme for the show, I thought, oh, I've got some funny stories about how I was introduced to queer literature as a teenager in a small town in Kansas. I just happened to find a book in my high school library that was a Prince Award winner back in, this is going to date me, in 2001. and I stole that book from my high school library. So I still have it. I did, you know, later into my adulthood, make a donation to the library, because I was, you know, feeling a little guilty about it. But, Hard Love by Ellen Whitlinger was the book, Prince Award winner, Good Enough to Steal. So it was sort of set in the 90s and, about two kids who make zines and go to Ani DeFranco concerts. So, throwback for anybody who has some nostalgia for those days, pretty fun, but it's about a boy who makes zines and meets a Puerto Rican lesbian who he becomes really great friends with, and is sort of like a tale of unrequited love, but introduced me to, you know, zines and Ani DeFranco, which were, you know, pretty influential to my teen self, and, you know, really sparked my love of queer YA, which has just blossomed and bloomed over the last few years. We're seeing so much more diversity within that category and so many more actually queer own voices authors actually telling their own stories and their experiences. So that's just it's a really exciting time in that genre from back when that was kind of a very niche, yeah, small thing, hard to find.
I'm thinking of the teen corner of that time, 2001, and it's not what it is now in terms of highlighting that audience and readership.
And the stories have really been able to transcend and cross over and not just become like a genre of like queer this or that. It's just really kind of culture in general. Everything is mainstream. It's acceptable to talk about all these things now, and you can have these conversations about fluidity and things of that sort without having to kind of, you know, bracket yourself off. And it's really kind of nice how things have kind of progressed through the years. But
there's still much to be done.
But yes, absolutely. Things have definitely kind of grown and blossomed.
So that's one of your picks.
Yeah, so that's definitely a throwback pick. So another favorite of mine that came out a few years ago and was actually the first book that I checked out when I got my first job in a library. It's The Miseducation of Cameron Post by Emily Danforth. And I picked it up because the cover had a picture of a girl on a big bale of hay.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, kind of attracted me for that. I love stories of teen girls in the Midwest. And so it's set in Iowa and is a very, like, not 100% autobiographical, but very, very based on the experiences of Emily growing up in a small town in the Midwest and coming out. And so on the day that her parents die in a tragic car accident is the first day that she kisses a girl when she's stealing gum from a convenience store. Mm. So I guess petty theft is also a theme for today.
A subgenre.
But it's an incredibly moving story that is all about, you know, coming out and, you know, finding your place and falling in love and the consequences of that. And it explores also, she's in an evangelical household. When her parents die, she lives with her aunt. And when they do find out that she's gay, send her to conversion therapy. So that's, you know, very troubling in like a dark phase of it. But she meets some people there that become, you know, friends and, you know, eventually kind of overcomes that and comes to terms with her queer identity. And it's, you know, it's also set in the 90s. So another throwback to that era, but a really great literary exploration. And for anyone who thinks, you know, young adult literature is like lesser than or, you know, lower quality, I'd say that's definitely a book that will change your opinion of that.
And I feel like those conversations in terms of the small town conversation, the Midwest, the South, the evangelical, those are the conversations that are still kind of active and good to be explored, because sometimes I take for granted living in California that some of these things have already, we're post this and post that. But as a nation or as a, you know, community, it's definitely still ripe for analysis and observation. So,
yeah, there's still some stuff that we're grappling with.
And even in California, there are a lot of conservative towns in California, I mean, where certain conversations still need to be had.
Yeah, I mean, the central, you know, valleys of California aren't that different from the Midwest in terms of culture in a lot of the times, you know, more rural and agricultural.
Agriculture backbone, absolutely.
So that's definitely a pick. You know, to swing in a different direction, I also can't talk about queer YA without mentioning Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe by Benjamin Alire Sáenz. And so it's the story of these two boys who meet at the swimming pool during the summer, you know, when they're young teens, and kind of form a friendship. One of them teaches the other how to swim, and so they just become friends, and they come from, you know, Mexican-American families that are, you know, pretty well-to-do, you know, from educated backgrounds. Like, one of their fathers is a professor, and they eventually move away and are apart and stay together through letters. And the other one, even despite their, you know, solidly, you know, middle-class background, has an older brother who the family doesn't talk about because he's incarcerated. And so there's sort of that element to it. And then, you know, just a lot of true family dynamics between these two boys growing up. And then eventually they realize that they've fallen in love with one another. It's a very sweet story that I've heard so many teens, you know, say that it resonates with them. I mean, I did that teen book club with that story before, and a girl said, you know, I may not be a gay boy, but I love the story and I related so much to these characters because of the families that they grow up in are so much like mine. And a pro tip to anybody who loves audiobooks, it's narrated by Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton fame, does an excellent job. So if that's of any interest, I believe you can find it on Hoopla as well.
Audiobooks are a whole other
and
topic.
And the audiobook performance, it does make a difference in terms of how things are read. So absolutely, Lin-Manuel probably did an excellent job.
Yeah,
so
it's really great.
What are you reading, Hong?
My pick for this.
Usually you get you know this.
I'll go in the middle.
Sneak perfect. In the end.
My pick for this this episode is Love and Rockets. It's a comic series by Jaime Hernandez, one of the Hernandez brothers. Gilbert does more kind of mystical Central American stories. They call them the Palomar stories. And Jaime's stories center around, they call them the Locas stories now or something, but Maggie and Hopi, two women. They have a fictional town called Huerta, which is, I guess, meant to be Los Angeles, but the Hernandez brothers are actually from Oxnard. So there are elements of the Oxnard agricultural background, but also he moved to L.A. later on. And but they started publishing, I believe, 82, 83 was the first comic. And Hopi is a lesbian and was one of the first kind of gay characters that I encountered when I started reading comics. I mean, I didn't start reading until I was late 80s, early 90s. But seeing characters like Maggie, Hopi, and Ray and various other characters in the stories, and the fact that the stories, as a backdrop, use the L.A. and Oxnard punk scenes as kind of the slice of life that the characters are involved in, because it helped kind of, I could relate to a lot of the characters really well. I mean, I knew Maggie and Hopi kind of analog and when I was growing up, and it kind of explores the situations that kind of lead to these scenarios where you always wonder about, you know, the punk scene, and especially the LA punk scene, because when punk broke in New York in like 77, you know, you had the Ramones, but in New York you had television, you had, you know, it was Talking Heads, it was a much more broader base, where the LA sound was very kind of intense, and I mean, it actually did spiral into like this overly machismo kind of thing that was kind of terrible for a while. I mean, but at the same time, you know, at the outset, bands like X and Germs, Black Flag, they were dangerous. I mean, they seemed dangerous, you know, and certain types of kids naturally gravitated to that. But it was always at the start, at least from what I came into it in the 90s, mid to late 90s, but I actually gravitate to that scene first. It was the nihilists and the anarchists. Those are the punks that I hung out with, and it was kind of strange because reading Love and Rockets, he was in the late 80s. He was writing from the perspective of that turn of the decade, 83, 84 hardcore scene, which was very nihilistic, very anarchistic, a very kind of like, you know, middle finger to authority. And I encountered that in the late 90s, and it still felt so fresh. And I, you know, jumped head first into thinking like it was this unique thing. And then I read Love and Rockets.
Love and Rockets is so interesting because on the one hand, from like looking at it from like a cartooning stylist like perspective, like it's so 90s and 80s, like in the kind of drawing and cartooning style. But there's also something so like kind of timeless about it, and that, like, I mean, aside from like cultural references and stuff, like it could still be today.
The art and the lines are very clean, and like I said, the stories that you can tell that he was a part of the scene and he kind of understood things and understood the backgrounds, because he explores kind of like for a lot of the Latinx, is that the correct thing?
Yeah.
So for those folks who have like maybe one sibling is a punk and the other sibling is like a chola, like it's just natural because, you know, you gravitate to certain sectors of the neighborhood and you might go this way and that way, but then they all come together and it's all family, and so I knew a lot of folks like that. And just the way the characters have, you know, the extent spectrum of the relationships with their parents, you know, where some have no relationship with their parents or a limited relationship or everything is hidden, which is what I did with my parents. I mean, and for me it was tough because I almost felt like my home wasn't broken enough. Sometimes it was, I mean, because at the time in the 90s, and, you know, being a poser was like the worst thing on the world. It was basically like the worst thing you could absolutely be. So being a poser and talking, not, you know, malarkey, I guess we'll say, to keep it G-rated. But those two things, you would catch a fit. You know, you someone would find you, they'd beat you up, like, absolutely. And so it was that kind of thing where authenticity was everything, where when I wasn't hanging out with the punks, I was at home reading about punks. I was reading Noam Chomsky. I was learning about Henry Kissinger. I was trying to be that person, so next time I could just, like, even if I didn't
say
anything.
You were doing your homework.
Even if I didn't say anything, I could at least be like, I was present in the conversation, and I'm not some, like,
you weren't missing the
references. I'm not a sellout poser, you know, like, I'm actually down for the culture, you know. So it was kind of interesting to see that, because reading Love and Rockets told me, like, in the 80s, that exact same thing was going on. And how I encountered it, nothing had changed. And it was like this kind of like light bulb went on, like, those who do not, you know the past are condemned to repeat it. And it was just, had we made any progress? Like, this fight for capital T truth and this quest to do this and that, like, no. It was a lot of the same issues where folks get caught up in the wrong aspects of the culture had absolutely persisted, and we had made very little progress. Like, the Food Not Bombs things and the Rock Against Racism, that was all still there, but there was just so much stuff to climb out of that it was tough. But I mean, it was a cool. I mean, he puts a good voice to that idea, where if you've never been involved with it or don't have any idea, you can get a good kind of sense. And having like a protagonist like Hopi, who is openly gay in a culture that and ended up turning super testosterone field. At the outset, punk was so egalitarian. Like, you had bands like the Slits and X-Ray Specs and, you know, the Raincoats and bands like that. And everything was and it turned in like the early to mid 80s as hardcore took over. And it's good to see that the roots were there, and eventually they blossomed back, because now most guitar based rock that's up and coming, that's really kind of happening, quote unquote, is female, you know,
so good.
Has a female voice or a more fluid voice that is not so macho guitar riff. I mean, the riffs are still savage, but, you know, not so much.
It doesn't have to be anchored by gender identity.
And the thing about Love and Rockets that I really like is that he allows the characters to age. Like, you know, I'm a diehard Simpsons fan, but I almost wish that they would let Bart and Lisa. They have those episodes like Bart, like Lisa's the president and flashback episodes, but they don't let them progress. So it's really hard to kind of mine that same well. But in the book, the characters grow. Maggie is now like an apartment manager. Hopi's like a teacher's assistant. I mean, but that also set off another chain of thoughts in my head, because I was thinking about these people that, I mean, the Maggie and Hopi that I know, these like zeitgeists of the culture that I kind of like looked at as like inspirations, and like, you know, we push them toward these creative pursuits. We tell them to chase, but then when they get chewed up and spit on the other end, they don't have, you know, they end up becoming apartment managers or like, you know, finding these anywhere they can fit in because they haven't been able to have a chance to kind of adapt to quote unquote normal existence. So, and even that for me, I mean, I kind of lucked out on this job because I'd probably be, destitute myself.
Do you know how many volumes Love and Rockets is up to?
It's been collected in various forms. Yeah. Santa Maria has a collection called Locas, which is the first volume. It's pretty thick. It's just the Jaime Hernandez stories. It doesn't have the Palomar stuff. But it is it's a pretty thick volume, and that'll get you up to about his run from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. The newer stuff is all on Hoopla, and if you are going that route, I believe the first four or five volumes are the Locust volume. So if you do get the book from Santa Maria, because I do love reading the physical copies, then you can start right around there's two books on Hoopla that will continue the story, and there's one additional volume that's not on either yet. But
is that a hint for me to purchase something?
Hoopla would add to Ledger, and they're probably going to add it. Yes. There's probably just because it just came out last year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you can get there's only one copy in the system of the Locus. It's in Santa Maria, and then Hoopla has the rest. But if you want to start from beginning from Hoopla, that's fine as well. But yeah, they have all the books, and if you want to check out Gilbert's stuff, which is very cool as well, the Palomar stories are great. But they take place in like Central America and things of that sort. I don't have as much of a relation because I'm kind of a poser in that respect, because I was an Asian guy hanging out with all the East Los punks. But
Hong, you're the most authentic person I know.
That's, you know what? That's really I feel like that's the criteria. You just always have to feel like you're trying to like have like just grasp onto something, and then like you say, hey, that's your bit of authenticity, what you can provide to the conversation. You know, that's all I try to do. So yes, Love and Rockets, specifically the Maggie and Hopi Locust side, but the Hernandez brothers always do great work, and they're from Oxnard. So support your local authors and content creators.
Oh yeah,
Cassidy.
Oh gosh. well, I have two picks, and we didn't really plan this either in the regard that they're both graphic novels. But my first pick is Fun Home by Alison Bechdel. That was also probably like my first, at least like queer specific, book that I read. My little story behind that, picking that up, was that, I went to college in rural central Pennsylvania, and I always liked comics, and I was a lifelong comic reader. And at that point in college, like I was venturing away from superhero graphic novels and stuff like that, and Archie and all that awesome stuff, back before Archie was now cool, and attractive edgy. Archie.
Edgy. I was reading an issue of Archie, and they had like Joyce Manor posters. And like
exactly.
Hop Along,
now Archie's the hotness, but in any case, I was starting my journey of like graphic novels as something else, and Fun Home at that point was only a couple years old, and people had talked about it because Alison Bechdel was from the town in which the college that I went to was, Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. Or actually, she was from like one of the more rural kind of areas, somewhere in that area. But so I was like, all right, I'm going to go to my public library and pick this up. And I found it on the shelf. And I remember when I was checking it out, the clerk at the desk was like, oh, that awful book that Allie wrote. And I was like, I hadn't read it at all or anything like that. And I was like, but there was, I'll never forget, like her, there was the familiarity of like that person calling her Allie. And that was nice. And but yeah, eventually, I read the book, and it is really a beautiful story, a beautiful coming age story of the author as she's coming out as a lesbian over kind of the course of her life. It's a memoir, and it reflects on how those feelings even kind of started in her childhood. But it's also kind of the story of her closeted father that she realizes kind of after his suicide, which is not really a surprise. Well, it's, you know, it's not a spoiler in the book because it's something that, you know, reflections happen early on. But there's these secrets that she kind of has to unravel. And it's something that she never really got the opportunity to talk to her father about. And it's interesting in that how their stories align and kind of interweave without them ever having gotten the chance to talk about it. And she is the writer illustrator on that. So it was a very good story.
And that went to Broadway, correct?
So yeah. That was such an interesting, like, as a fan of that book. And then when there were the early talks of it going to Broadway, or when it was even off Broadway, we were like, wow, like a musical, like, but whatever. And then, like, a couple of years later, it goes to, like, the Ojai Playwriters Conference, and then it's on Broadway. And then not only does it go to Broadway, but it wins Best Musical Award. It gets nominated for Best Musical Theater Album and Best Book and Best Score. And, yeah, that was the other secret pick in there, is that Ring of Keys on the soundtrack is just, like, incredibly beautiful. So, that was my one pick. And then my other one was Lumberjanes.
Yay, so, Lumberjanes.
Lumberjanes. A little bit for a younger audience, but still.
I think all ages.
It's really all ages. and it tells a story of a band of campers attending summer camp, the Lumberjanes, and the various misadventures that they get on that summer. And whereas my first pick, Fun Home, was, you know, very specifically a memoir about, you know, a lesbian coming of age story, Lumberjanes is an adventure story about a friend where that gender identity and conversation happens along the path of the story, along the path of their adventures. You meet the two Lumberjanes dating, and then also some other of the Lumberjanes who I don't want to spoil different things, because the creative team on that does just a beautiful way of really just bringing up identity in a way that it isn't necessarily central to the story, but
it's
organic. Is central.
It's important to their identity, but is not the central, coming out is not the central theme of the story. It's about, you know, adventures at a supernatural summer camp.
And it's really getting, like, they just do it in a way that, like, is just opening up.
And I think that's the trend, especially in stories for younger people about, you know, gender and sexual identity, is that while we still get the traditional coming out narratives, there's a lot more about fantasy with queer characters and adventure stories with queer characters, and they're solving mysteries and doing all of that, you know, in addition to the identity-centered stories.
Yeah, it shifts the focal point, just becomes one more aspect of their personality, and it is one more thing that lends itself to why they're good characters and why they're, you know, characters that are able mm-hmm. to
and
kind of solve
problems.
And it
just adds, like, so much nuance to this story. And I'll note that I don't know why it matters, but it matters to me. Both of them were awarded the GLAAD book award. So, and then Fun Home just has a whole other slew of awards, but it's just exciting to see books honored.
And if you want even more great honored books, you know, for LGBT content, there's a host of them sponsored by the American Library Association. So there's the Stonewall Book Awards and, you know, a whole bunch of others. And you can find all those lists online. We can link to them in the notes because, more and more, you know, they're winning mainstream awards. But then mm-hmm. there's also, like, lists really singling out that content for mm-hmm. people who are looking for it.
Excellent. We will put a link to that in the show notes. And
I'm picked out. But something that we introduced this summer, Molly, in the theme of choose adventure, and we're asking kind of our guests that come on is how you're choosing adventure this summer. So Hong has a vacation planned of some sort. I'd like to go sea fishing. I don't know if I'll go deep sea fishing.
Harbor or boat?
I think I'm going to stick in the harbor, but that's one way that I'm going to try something not new but different.
Oh, I feel summer. A little put on the spot. Yeah, right?
I don't even
they
know.
Didn't warn me
can
about this.
Can you even take vacation with the workload?
Yeah, no, it's, well, you know, for youth services, summer is really busy. You
or is
know,
there
so,
something you're looking forward to?
Yeah, summer? Well, you know, I'm going to the American Library Association and conference in New Orleans next weekend, and I've never been. So
that
I'm looking forward to, not so much the weather, you know. I've gotten really accustomed to our coastal, you know, Mediterranean climate here. And so the dripping humidity and high heat of, you know, the deep south is
do you know
not
where
really
you're staying?
Calling
are you
to
Airbnb-ing
me.
Or?
No, I'm at one of the conference hotels because that's just the most convenient. So like the Hilton, you know. But definitely I'm within walking distance of some good bakeries. So I'm going to definitely be having some adventures with pastry while I'm there. Because as a vegetarian, I've heard it's like not the culinary destination of my dreams. But
probably,
I'm going to dig deep for some off the beaten
no
path.
Seafood
no
either.
Seafood. Yep. I'm
something
one of those.
Covered in powdered sugar.
Yeah. So I'll just eat my weight in beignets and enjoy that. So yeah, that's coming up next week and lots of that. And then yeah, this fall I'll definitely be doing some traveling for sure. I'm planning a getaway with my sister. We're gonna go to an all-inclusive resort in Mexico. And picking one of the romantic getaway ones so that
like
there are no
or...
partiers and no children and no one to bother us. So yeah, the romantic getaway of my dreams with my sister.
That
a lot
is
of
exciting.
Reading.
Exciting and adventurous.
Yes.
Yeah, New Orleans and Mexico. I mean, those are two awesome places.
Yeah, so, and local wine tasting. I guess those are my local adventures. We joined a few different wine clubs over the last couple weekends, so doing a lot of tastings here.
Los Olivos, San Inez, everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. You know, we got, you know, in Solvang, our favorite is SevTap, which they donated two tastings for an adult summer reading getaway. River Bench, which has a tasting room, you know, in the Funk Zone, but a beautiful, you know, location up near Santa Maria. And then you can get a joint membership at Muni and Potex. So that's those are our favorites so far of locally. But of course, that's why I moved to Santa Barbara's for the wine scene. So
that's not a bad reason for sure.
I feel like I need to have more adventures now. That's quite an adventure. For being put on the spot, that's quite an adventure summer. So.
You did good. You picked
yes.
adventure.
Yeah.
And we hope that our listeners, along with our readers, are picking adventure this summer.
And enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us for another episode of the Santa Barbara Public Library Coffee Break. Thank you, Molly.
Yeah. Happy reading.
We'll see you at the library.
Take care.